Hi, I'm Jada Cesar, mental health and body positive advocate.
And I'm Louise Troen, the Vice President of International Marketing and Communications at Bumble.
And welcome to Unsubscribe, the podcast that aims to help you unsubscribe from the negative habits in your life and resubscribe to healthier, happier modes of living. We're joined by a host of amazing guests for our first series who are pioneering the way in their respective industries and breaking boundaries along the way.
This podcast is brought to you by Bumble, and we are the social networking app that's focused on encouraging women to make the first move in love, in friendship, and in business. The first movers on this podcast are real testament to what can be achieved when you go after exactly what you want.
And today we have Joy Crooks, the talented indie artist who is an amalgamation of her rich cultural roots and London upbringing. She is incredibly passionate about representation and is pioneering her own path in the music industry. Represented by Sony, tapped as one to watch, she is already selling out gigs up and down the country, and we're so excited to have her here today. I listen to a podcast and I'm sitting there on the tube, rush hour, and I'm just like, psst, and like spit everywhere because I'm like trying to hold in my laughter. And people are just like,
there's nothing more uncomfortable than like solo emotional bursts. Like,
yeah. Oh, I've cried on the tube, but like dramatically cried.
Oh my God, I've done that too. Watching a film. And like,
I just cried. I had nothing to look at. I was just crying. And what I do is I try and look at the highest point of the tube to stop me crying, but it makes it worse because then
I
look
back
down.
Me want to just come over to you and just give you a hug. You don't even have to tell me what's wrong.
See, no one's done that. They just look at me like I've...
You know what's so funny? I remember there was this guy and he was having a panic attack. He was this old man and it was during Eid and he was fasting and it was really hot. And I was like, look, sit down. Are you okay? Do you need me to call anyone? And I just got out of a meeting where we were having this great, vibrant conversation. So having another conversation with a stranger was just not in like out of the ordinary. Mm. And he was like, no, I'm fine. Maybe I call my wife. And like, I was like, right, okay, let's go for your book. Let's call your wife. And then after I like helped him off the bus and his wife was waiting for him, another lady turned around, tapping the shoulder, was like, that was really nice of you, you know? And I'm like, why are we congratulating people on what should just be normal? And just something that we do.
It's also like the tube or aeroplanes. Like we often talk about this at Bumble, like that connectivity point. It's like we're all craving social interaction and like talking to people and learning from other people. And yet we stand every day next to tens of people and we don't have the incentive or the like feeling of comfort enough to go up and even just say hello or like compliment each other. And it's really bizarre almost that we've like crafted a society where we are also desperate for likability and to be favoured.
You just
and
won't go up to people.
Yeah.
I met my partner by going up to him.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I just thought, you know what? You look hella cool.
Yeah.
Like, and I liked his outfit and I was like, you just look cool. Yeah. Like, and you know, I wasn't even thinking about, oh, take me out, none of that. Yeah. I just thought, you look really cool. You look like someone I'd be friends with.
But that's how it
I didn't.
Be.
He was just standing on his own. And I just thought, what do I have to lose? Like, oh, he says no. Oh, I'll lose sleep tonight. No, I won't. What's her name? Erica Badu is playing that night. Of course I'll sleep. But then, I just went up and it was fine. And I asked for a lighter, even though I had nothing to light.
It's a smart approach.
Yeah, I think you just have to think, what you have to lose. You have nothing to lose.
Yeah, you really do.
And also, like, the sum of whatever anxiety it takes to, like, go and ask the question is going to be outweighed by, like, the potential of it being something.
Yeah, and it's always the fear because we're so used to just standing there in our own, like, with this, like, stush face. And then actually, as soon as you break the ice, everyone's like, hi! And then you've got this, like, big beaming smile looking back at you. And it's like, oh, actually, that wasn't as scary as what I was expecting.
I don't think anyone cares.
No, you care way more than anyone else cares about
it. No one cares. Mm. Nobody cares. Like, you don't know what that person's been through that morning. You don't know, like, and it's. I think the same when I'm performing. Like, when I perform and I think, oh my goodness, I'm going to be judged. I think, like, probably 95% of you wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
And not in like a, oh, I'm so much better way, but like, it is so nerve-wracking that you probably wouldn't be able to, if I said, come on, do this, with no bribery, with just said to you, oh, can you come on this stage and do what I'm doing now?
Yeah.
But they'd be like, no.
Just watching someone in their element, and I know you do this a lot with your work, you're really vulnerable and you speak honest or sing honestly about your experiences or the messages that you want to share. Just seeing someone just in their space, not making you feel something.
Yeah.
They're not forcing the emotion
at you.
They're just
feeling
it. They're just feeling it.
Yeah.
There's something so mesmerizing about watching someone do that and just be confident in their element, being also quite open-hearted. Because people are craving to feel that too. So I think that's what is amazing about going to a performance like that.
I just like to make other people nervous.
Yeah.
Because actually you can be in such an element that it actually makes other people nervous. Mm. You can like, you can flip the switch if you wanted to, I think. But that's like, it's not, I'm really not trying to be cocky when I say that. I just think, like I said, it comes back to that mentality of, could you do this? Could you be this honest?
But also you quickly kind of flow through that piece of like feeling uncomfortable. Like I've had it in social situations, or you're on stage doing a presentation and like you ask, does anyone have a question? And no one has a question, and you have to hold that moment. And actually it's never as bad as you think it's going to be. And number two, once you've gone past like, okay, no one's going to ask me anything, if you can just own it and move forward, it's always fine. I think it's that, like, even just the concept of awkwardness makes people feel uncomfortable. But actually once you come like to terms with it, and you're like, it's a very natural, normal thing to feel nervous on stage, or to go into a situation where you don't know anyone and feel anxious, that like regular understanding that that's going to happen, kind of you can find peace with that.
Do you find that with like your kind of way of wanting people to embrace that uncomfortable space, is what you mentioned, do you think that that comes from a place because you do that and you've seen the amount of growth that you can have by being in that uncomfortable space, feeling vulnerable? Or is there like another, like what do you think is interesting for you to make people feel like that?
I just think it's unfair. Why should you be in a space? You've paid for a ticket, you know, you've paid to be in this space. You've got your right, you've got your little genuine space. You've got your, you know, your 5 centimetres around you. Why should you feel uncomfortable? You're here to enjoy yourself. It's music.
So you want people to loosen up?
Well, it's like, and the thing is, London, they're so stush. Everyone's up their own arses. Like, and I go, right, we're going to sing together. And they're like, huh? And I'm going to sing together. That's what we're going to do. And I've like, I force, like, I don't ever shout at my audience because that's not fair. You don't, it's not about bullying people. It's about teasing them. It's about teasing them. Come on, I can see you. And I say on stage, I'm like, you know, I can see you, right? You can see, I can see you not singing. And I'm doing this while I'm playing and I'm singing to them. And they're like, oh. And then you see them open up a little bit and their mate's doing it and then they kind of find it funny. And we're just like, you know, I'm having fun. I want you to have fun. When I'm not having fun, you can see it.
Do you think it comes from like the space of everyone wants to kind of be really controlled, and like you're on Instagram, you want to be really pretty and put together all the time, and not ever show face or be fun or letting go?
I think it's London. I say this a lot about London. When I play gigs in London, you know, people are, it's because of the pace of the city, and because the city moves so fast, I think everyone becomes like, is it even possible to become even more of a stranger to strangers? Because that's how it is sometimes. You move so fast and you're plugged in, and you know, you bump into people, and your leg's leaning on another person's leg on the tube, and that you almost become even more isolated because there is no interaction whatsoever. So when you are at these things, I don't know if it's Instagram or anything. I think people are just genuinely, this city makes you shy. I think this city makes you shy. It moves so fast, you know, and then we've got the whole taboo of talking to someone on the tube. And, you know, I don't want to blame everything on social media. I think social media, all it's done is kind of exaggerate things that have already existed. But, you know, that London taboo, everyone knows about it. It's like, I love chatting to someone outside a corner shop, and you'll see other people walk past and be like, what's that girl doing? But I'm from an area that provided me with that sense of community. You know, I grew up in South London. South London's known to have a huge community of ethnic minorities. And I just found it easier in an area that was so full of grief and full of real, real, real life problems, to just talk to people. What's the harm in it? Just talk to people. My dad did it. My dad's very chatty. My dad knows the security guard at Tesco's. He knows that guy. I know the guy that's recently had like a brain operation. He chills at Paddy Power a lot. And we have a little chat and he tells me that women are crazy. And I go, well, some of us are. And then, you know, like, it's, I think sense of community is really, really, really important. And actually it's so much more rich. It's so much more rich. Like, my tapestry feels rich when I go and have those conversations.
I completely feel you. Like, I grew up in West London in Ladbroke Grove, and I know like my local news agent Kira, he's like known me since I was a kid. My parcels for me. He's like, where's your mum at? I haven't seen her for a few days. The guy in the laundryette when his brother passed away in the fire at Grenfell, it's like we could see him like and his mental health just deteriorate, but he still would come to work because he's like, I just want to make the tea for people. And it's like those little small little moments are so rich, even though those are the people that have the least amount of money.
They're so important.
But also recognizing that like and we have this kind of theory at Bumble that like one connection can like genuinely change your life, like going up to your now boyfriend or like us meeting at like a freak event. Like, we don't put enough power on the fact that like those interactions and those connections can change your future forever. And like, you talk a lot about tapestry, and it's something that I really agree with, that like your tapestry is always evolving throughout your life, right? So like when you're younger, it's made up of your family network and the community around you, and as you grow up and evolve and go into industry and various other types of kind of networks, you're constantly like finessing what you want that tapestry to look like. And you know, I can definitely speak for myself. When I've really bought into new relationships and challenged myself to meet new people, it's ended up evolving that piece of tapestry for myself. So it's almost like...
Because if it goes right or wrong, you learn something either way. Like, especially if it goes wrong. You just think, well, I'm never going to mess with someone like you again. And actually, I'm not going to give myself to someone so quickly. I mean,
and that's
obviously
just
depends.
As important to figure out what is... what you don't want as well as, like, what is right for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So take it back to, like, your community and like your upbringing and your household. Like, what was your household like for you growing up?
It was funny. It was confusing. Okay. My household was just, it was very much filled with love. It was filled with mannerisms. It was filled with my family are cheeky. They're cheeky. That's how we get on. You know, like, this may sound really specific, but I've still to this day, when I come home, I have to wear inside clothes, but not pajamas. You wear inside clothes. Like, you come home, you take off your outside clothes, you wear inside clothes. You know, the way that we used to eat on the table. Sometimes my mom and I wouldn't eat on the table. We'd chill and we eat by hand, like on the side of the kitchen. Like, there's so many narratives. There were so many narratives growing up. And I had two homes because my dad lived in a different one. So it was, his was like a bachelor's pad, and like, he was a bit more like rough around the edges. He was kind of like, yeah, put that record on, Joy. We'd sit and listen to records. He'd be smoking his Marlboros outside the window. I'd be cooking like beans because he thought we'd get swine flu and bought loads of cans. No, genuinely had an entire cupboard of cans because my dad is such a hypochondriac. He thought we would get swine flu, be locked in for 3 years. Genuinely went to Tesco's and bought every single tin I could see. Mm-hmm. No joke. This man was,
And your dad is Bengali.
He's Irish.
And your mother's Bengali.
Yeah.
And how do you feel that those two influences kind of affected you growing up?
Oh my God, like in every way, shape and form. How did they influence me? You know what? My mum did it she didn't really speak about how she was going to influence me. She just did. She influenced me by actions. By watching her, whereas my dad walked me through quite a few things, explained things to me. You know, my mum lived by example and my dad lived by example as well, but also, you know, spoke out and you know, doing stuff like taking me to church and being like, you don't need to believe in any of this, I did it, so you need to do it. And I'm like, but why? He's like, it's an Irish thing, you need to do it. And he used to sit me down and he used to say, I don't care if you're brown, I don't care if you speak in a South London accent, I don't care if this or that, you're Irish. No one can take that away from you, you're Irish. And I loved that. And to this day, I always say I'm 100% of both, because why the hell would I be half-half? I got a whole of both.
Love that.
So that just makes sense to me. But yeah, I can't really... How did they influence me in every way, shape and form? It just really depends. You know, my mum walks with purpose everywhere, as does my dad, actually. They both walk with purpose. I think that's my favorite piece of advice. Walk with purpose. You're going to get cotton buds. Walk with purpose.
So what else does that mean to you?
Walk with purpose. Well, it just means that, you know, I actually learned this also. I've Irish danced for like 15, 16 years. And when you carry yourself, you actually... just that physical holding yourself together actually does something to your mentals as well. If you're physically walking like this, you know, I grew up in an area where we all walked like this. Like, looked down, not many people looked up. Metaphorically and physically, people just don't look up. And actually, when you walk down an area that suffers, that has so much suffering, that has so much going on, so many narratives, and you walk like this, you know, that road's yours. That road is yours. It's everyone else's too, but that road is yours. You know, I'm an empath, so I can pick up things from other people quite quickly, especially in an area like that. If I'm walking like this, it protects me a little bit more. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sounds weird, but it's just those tiny little techniques.
No, I actually think, like, your body language and your physical can lead a lot of your mental.
Yeah.
And I definitely know, like, when I look up or if I put my shoulders back, I always feel automatically more powerful.
Yeah, I think I adopted that growing up in, like, the environment I grew up in, because, you know, if you didn't grow like that, you were just going to be taken advantage of. Mm. People are going to try and see, all right, you know, I can get a vibe that you're weak in some sense.
That's the problem with being streetwise, is that people can read you quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People can read you quickly, and you actually have to be more on guard than you think. Mm. And that's why I said my mum lived by example, because the way that she'd walk into places, she's this dark brown lady that will walk into places, barely speaks, you know, she does obviously speak English, but she still has her accent. You know, she's basically easy to judge, easy mm-hmm. to spot from a mile away. But she walks into places and basically her attitude is, I belong in here.
Mm.
I belong in here. I'm meant to be in here. Mm. And she doesn't, you know, she's not aggressive about it. She just has this elegance when she walks into places. I'm meant to be in here. And there's no doubt about that.
And I think as soon as you give off that energy, regardless of, like, whether you are supposed to or not, people around you just assume that you are supposed to be there. I mean,
I think it's quiet confidence. Yeah. It's quiet confidence. It's not you being like, you know, snapping your fingers at waiters and da 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 da. It's quiet confidence. It's that kind of self-assured attitude, walking into, you know, and back in her day, walking into places and just going, yeah, I'm belonging here.
Yeah.
No, you fucking don't.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about how that translated over to you in terms of, you're, you know, an incredibly, like, amazing young woman entering the music industry, typically dominated by men. You know, you clearly have incredible drive and are kind of acutely clear on your purpose and what you're trying to achieve. You're definitely someone that's walked into the music industry with purpose. Tell us a little bit about what that initial kind of phase looked like for you. And I know you've spoken a bit about some challenges and sort of instances you had to face and overcome. Mm. Can you walk us through a bit about what they were and how you dealt with them?
My Irish dad and I were having this conversation the other day, and we were talking about how I get called an R&B and a soul artist. I am not either. I'm 100% not an R&B artist. I'm 100% not a soul artist. I can be soulful. Mm. I can dig deep. Yes, but I think I'm an alternative artist. Mm. I would label myself as an alternative artist, full stop. Borderline indie sometimes. I don't think I'm R&B and soul. Where did R&B and soul come from?
Mm.
I put out a song that sounded just like Lana Del Rey type song. You know, my diction was fantastic in the song. It was a very classical, like, sweeping song. I put that out when I was like 17, and it got labeled R&B, and I just thought, what?
Where do you think that came from?
It came from potentially someone seeing that I didn't look like I could be an alternative artist, whatever that means. And then being labelled an R&B or soul artist.
Mm,
okay. Or everyone loves going, and this new South London artist, South London doesn't only produce, you know, jazz, soul, R&B. We produce other things too, you know. You can be a black pop artist. You can be a Bengali, you know, indie artist. Why isn't that possible?
Mm.
And I'm not here trying to wave a victim flag. That's not what I'm trying to do. I just think that's very interesting to acknowledge.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go on Twitter, have a rant with anyone about it. Da, 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 da. No, it's just interesting to acknowledge. It's interesting to know that that kind of pigeonholing system exists.
Mm.
There are much worse things going on in the music industry, but it's just interesting to know that exists, because if that can exist, other things can exist around it.
Yeah. It's almost like that categorization has, like, the music industry has thought that that needed to exist in order for it to kind of support itself,
so or for that people to understand and be able to comprehend, okay, if we put her in a box, it makes sense because this is what we're used to seeing. Whereas I think what our, especially the podcast and hence the name Unsubscribe, is like, actually we're going to consciously take ourselves out of the thought patterns that we've created, the stereotypes and the prejudice that we have already ingrained,
which is why acknowledgement's so important, because you can't notice difference unless you've acknowledged it. But yeah, I just think it's funny because press people must just look at this and be like, right, here's a picture of her. Where the fuck is she from? Right, Bangladesh and Ireland. Wait, where's Bangladesh again? is that Mauritius? Right, no, Ireland. Oh, they're quite rough, aren't they? Oh, yeah. South London. Oh, what box are we going to put her in? I don't know, mate. She doesn't fit in a box. Yeah, do you know what I mean? And I just think it's so funny. It's just funny to imagine a bloke in an office being like, where does this chick go?
Yeah.
It's just funny. I want to be put into, like, yodel music next or something.
This is why we wanted to get you in, because this whole piece that we're trying to kind of untap is we don't need to be categorized, and we also don't need to be subscribing to specific labels and expectations of who we think the industry or our network or whoever thinks that we should be. And in order for us to challenge and change that, we have to be first movers in our approach to that. And when you're a first mover, you are championing something that's different, and it can sometimes be uncomfortable and really difficult. And it takes a really brave spirit to push through that boundary of people might not pick up on this. People might question me on this. I might not, you know, the very kind of nature of not fitting in means that you potentially could be excluded from a certain kind of component of what you're trying to do. And what we really want to do is, you know, get people like you to speak up against how you're challenging that and why you feel it's important to kind of push through those barriers.
And also, may I add to that, it's the resilience to constantly keep pushing your message against a system or a like a label or, you know, your work or an occupation, and on continuously try to convince people that you're worthy. I know when I started out modeling and I was like, I'm a plus size model, pushed the term to squash the taboo that plus size yes can look like me, so everyone I speak to are like, oh, but that's not what I thought plus size was. I was like, well, actually yes, in the industry, like, you kind of have to educate people about what you're doing. But what I find really interesting with all the women that I meet that are pioneering their own path is that resilience boils down to integrity somewhere along the line, and that integrity is built with a certain unique foundation. And it's like getting into the root of where that comes from, what that is. And maybe it's the your mum standing with purpose every day, owning her position when she walks into that shop. Even though, I don't know, was your mum born here?
No.
So she wasn't born here. She doesn't even know how to navigate this landscape. But that unforeseen, like, that confidence, that quiet confidence is, it trickles down into the way our children see us, the way that you saw her. And now you've been able to have that bravery moving forward.
Like, even I saw my little brothers for like 5 minute a pocket yesterday. So my dad and my two little brothers. And I got my dad the new James Blake record because I think it's so good. But I got it on CD because obviously he drives like the car and stuff. And then I've been making like a really nice like pilau rice recently. And I've got this really nice spice mix. I got that for my dad. And I saw the little monkeys and they're like five. And they're just like, they make my heart melt. Like, I just go crazy. I don't care about anyone around. Like, I'll be the loudest person in the street or anywhere we are just to like wind them up and make them laugh. And, you know, I don't know, it sounds soppy, but they make me very warm. It makes me happy. It just kind of makes everything, like, you know, when you rewind a cassette and it's back to square one, is how I feel when I see my family. They drive me mad, but I love them so much.
I think everyone's family drives them.
Yeah, no
mad.
Family's perfect.
But it's almost this, I'm interested in this, the idea of like unconditional love. There's something so pure and like solid and kind of unwavering about the love of a family or your community that perhaps you can't get from your work colleagues or the industry that you're in, because it's always moving. Tell us a little bit about when you first entered kind of music and how you kind of navigated the relationships that you obviously have had as your foundation with your family versus the industry, which is a very different type of kind of way
of
connecting.
It was very difficult, actually. It really did take a toll on some of the relationships in my family. I think because I didn't realise how stressful music was. I think people go into the industry thinking it's going to be this dream and it's going to be High School Musical 4, and it just isn't. And you've got to work really hard. It's the same as starting up a business. My mum says you don't earn money when you start a business until you're 3 years in. You know, you're only reinvesting back, and then finally you might bring some home after 3 years. The thing that you don't get, no one teaches you about music is that actually... it's a lifestyle. It's not a job. It's a lifestyle. And that's the hardest part.
Yeah.
You talk about a lot how, sorry to interrupt you, how music is therapy. And for me, I find that such, like, I think everyone should have their thing, like have your anchors. And it seems like obviously family are one for you. They're definitely one for me and Lou. But explain like how music, like what does it mean to you? How does it feel? And why it's important to have that outlet that you control that is yours?
I mean, like anything creative, when you're in your flow, it feels good. When you're in that groove, when you're in that place, that music kind of just falls off you like dead skin cells. Like, it just feels great. But it's not always like that. At the end of the day, like I said, it's a job / lifestyle. So, you know, there aren't times when it's always therapeutic. But I think when I'm deep into a song that I love, or even I've written it 6 months ago and I'm just playing it on the guitar and I lose myself in it a little bit, that's kind of, you know, or performing. Like, you have the whole adrenaline rush, but on top of that, you kind of just lose yourself sometimes. And like, Nina Simone says, like, the closest she's ever felt to being free was on stage when she's like lost herself in performances. Like, she felt the definition of freedom on a stage playing that piano and singing her lungs out, and I kind of get what she's saying, because there are times when you can properly and that tiny little pocket of time, you know, like a really good therapy session can last you a really, really long time.
It's that sense of self-expression, isn't it, when we're constantly told to like be a certain way or keep it in or like, you know, repress everything. We're massive on like what we subscribe to, foot trail of like schools of four or different like music that we listen to or whatever, like skills that we like to do, hobbies, etc. Is there anything else that you grew up kind of not subscribing to necessarily, but that was like your anchors, your rocks, your, you know, points of reference when you were going through something turbulent or distressing? What else did you fall back on, would you say?
Love sleeping.
Yeah.
And it sounds really...
Sleeping is really underrated.
Self-care, man.
Yeah, I mean, self-care, yeah, but I think I was always... I've never been huge on, like, I'm going to put a face mask on, and then my mind has too much time to think about things. It's about doing, but then making sure you don't repress while you're doing that. Mm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Staying busy, but giving yourself time to either grieve or feel or, you know, let whatever needs to be let out. Otherwise, it'll come back and bite you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Einstein's theory of, like... whatever energy, there's an opposite and equal energy and reaction to that. And it's like, if you are just going full steam ahead with work, and I know I've been there, and I'm assuming, like, I know that you have as well, because we've had this conversation a million times of like, just work, and then it's something's going to lack somewhere else and you're going to crash.
Yeah.
I also think like, we're all so fixated on like achievement and it being this solid like end result that we're all working towards forever. And actually, so much of success comes from progress. And I can't
remember. You've got to count the tiny little steps.
Totally. And I can't remember who said it. I think it might have been Mandela, but it's saying the man who is brave isn't this the most successful. It's the man who conquers being afraid. And it's that conquering that actually is more powerful from a self-development point of view. So instead of wanting to look just like this woman on Instagram that you see, or thinking that being a CEO is the point that everything will be fixed, it's actually totally wrong and really unhealthy to be training and teaching our younger generations to think like that. It's the minutiae in every day, from speaking to the guy at Paddy Power to like these guys sitting in with us today. Like, those are the moments of like real kind of raw happiness that we need to all fixate.
See, that's on. So you sort of talked about a school of thought. So on your point, I actually do something. I don't know if I should share this because I've already shared it. But but you're not meant to share your wishes. You know what I mean? You're not meant to share, or when you make a wish, you know that whole like, I'm not meant to share when you make a wish. Yeah.
Although I don't know anyone, like, I don't know who wrote that rule.
Yeah, so just...
We're unsubscribing. Nobody knows. Right now. Yeah. Bye.
Well, I just, ever since I was young, I started this like 6 years ago. Mm. Every time I have an opportunity to make a wish, whether that's a birthday cake, whether that's a eyelash, whether that's, you know... Whatever you...
What are the other things that you make wishes
for? A fountain. I mean, I make a wish every day. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, just, you know, when you can get like a magical wish, all of that. Yeah. Basically, I always wish for exactly the same thing. And I wish, it sounds so wet, but I wish to be happy. Because you can wish for a private jet, but that shit can fucking take you to your death. And you're like, you're 10 feet under.
Yeah, Alanis, you know what I mean? Ironic. Let's just play that, guys. Producers.
Yeah. I wish to go on holiday, gets trapped by a hurricane, never comes back again. It's just that, you know, but if you wish to be happy, whatever outcome there is, the end of it will be you being happy.
Yeah, definitely.
You know.
But also remembering that like the acquisition of material things does not equate to happiness.
If you just get a really, really tasty, gluten-free, because I'm allergic to gluten, cake that day, and that makes you happy... then that's all you need.
Yep.
Yeah, but that is enough. Like, I don't know if, you know, when I go back to Bangladesh, GDP is so much higher there because it's the small things that make people happy.
Yep.
And I feel the same. Like, I my auntie made this bomb curry one day. She makes bomb curries all the time, but it was just, this one hit the soul. And that was it. I was happy for a good 2 days after that.
Well, should we move on to our little food segment? Just because we're here and we can come back to the main thing.
Yeah, we think this is really funny, but no one else really laughs.
What's that?
So we have a food segment in our podcast. It happens at any point in the podcast. But we bring in our guests something we think they'd enjoy to eat, or something that represents them. It's not always...
Mine is definitely not what technically people enjoy, edible. Otherwise you're going to be really disappointed.
is this gluten-free?
And I mean, you might not... I don't think I'm going to eat mine either. But it's what it represents, because me and Lou, we think... and like for me, my culture especially as well, I'm Turkish and Spanish, great conversations happen around food, family come together around food, and we want to squash the taboo that food is something that's negative. It's not, it's there's so much greatness that comes from it.
What, yeah, like what the hell, since when was food negative?
Right,
it's the root of like, all food's like a part of my branding, like yeah. Yeah. I'll be on a live thing and I'll be too busy eating like 9 rice cakes before I can see anyone.
Trust me, I ate croissants the entire time I trained for the marathon. It was the only thing that there was like positive reinforcement after every mile, food.
No, but isn't that's carbs, isn't it? And carbs burn slowly.
I mean, there was no science behind it, it was just what I wanted to eat.
No, but that's good. I know someone that like didn't even practice for a marathon, ate loads of potatoes and then like just did a marathon because it but all the like energy burns slow. Yeah. So actually you're doing the right thing.
Well, it should be gels and flapjacks, but whatever, croissants, chocolate croissants and everything like that worked. But anyway, I have something for you.
Okay.
Jada's is really nice and you're probably gonna want to be best friends with her, and then I'm gonna give mine and you're gonna leave the room.
Right, no, mine's like the really thoughtful words, but it's because I'm not funny. That's why.
Let's have it.
Funny.
So this, you might not eat it. You might not like it. I don't think it's gluten free, but I couldn't. That information was not on the internet, FYI.
Mm-hmm. Let's get that.
I've got you some blue cheese, which you probably don't like, but you can give it away. You don't like it. She's holding her nose right now.
I'm from South London. I can just go as far as Baby Bell.
That's just because like they're my favourite.
Okay, we'll send you some Baby Bell after this. Cakes,
but the blue cheese is meant to represent something about you, which immediately
never kissing anyone ever again.
You're not blue smell or smelly.
That's what we thought.
It's I just think with blue cheese, it's something that just gets better with time.
You can just frame it if you don't want to eat it.
No, but I'm going to... Obviously, I've got, like, European friends that will eat that. Thank you so much. You're so kind. I would embrace you, but then we'd mess up the old microphone situation.
So, Jada's are always really thoughtful, and everyone, like, cries and, like, really loves them. And I was given the, like, token funny one, and I love a pun.
Sorry, but happiness is the best thing in the world, and, like, anyone that can make you laugh is...
What is it? Is it like swim, a cock shaped like basic, lollipop? Or
like
something?
Any food that I can. That would have been even smarter.
It's a titty lollipop.
So I love a pun.
Okay.
I'm obsessed at Bumble at like writing a lot of our captions and copy just because of these jokes. So I got you some eggs because we think your music's excellent.
Yay!
You know what? I rate these eggs because they're real eggs.
She's actually going to eat them. I'll eat these. She's a blue cheese.
Yeah, I'll eat these.
And it's a good yolk.
Yeah. Yay!
Here all day, guys.
As in joke.
And this one, a double joke. And I got you some trail mix because we really think you're a trailblazer. We think you are remarkably impressive. You're exactly the kind of woman that I would have liked to look up to when I was younger.
Bless you.
We think you are refreshing with your attitude,
thank
powerful
you.
With your vulnerability, and exactly what the world needs more of. So some trail mix.
Yay.
Hey.
Aww.
He's a fucking...
I actually just noticed you also bought some nuts because we're nuts, but I thought maybe two was enough. So and
that
is,
can we save that for, no, that's just a representation of us.
Oh, that's so lovely. I wonder
what
I would have got.
They kind of affect our moods, like you kind of can tell the kind of people we are. Foolish and childish and thoughtful and lovely.
I mean,
if you're Turkish, have you ever tried those sugared chickpeas?
No.
Yeah, wait, I used to always get them in the Turkish supermarket.
They dried.
They're just chickpeas, but they've got sugar around them. They're like sugared chickpeas, and you just eat them dry.
I think I have.
They're like white, and they're like dotted on the outside. And but I don't know what the pun would be there. Yeah. They just taste really good, and I'd love to share. Like I love sharing stuff that tastes good with people.
Yeah. Mm. Oh my god, me too. I feel almost guilty having dessert and not being able to enjoy it with someone else with all like the noises that go around. Chocolate fondant is my favorite thing in the world. FYI.
I like just anything to do with a chocolate fountain and my tongue.
Damn, we should have bought that. What did we think of that?
I really want one. I'm going to get one for my home. Yeah. It's just going to be
just
there
every night.
All the
no,
time.
I can't come out. There's a lot of people, and I can definitely say I was like this in my early 20s, that don't necessarily have the confidence to take risks or be bolder. You know, what was that in you that said, I'm going to take a risk and jump into this industry? Like,
I was just always a nutter.
Okay.
I was just always a bit of a nutter. It's weird. Like, I'll look at pictures of myself when I was a kid and I'm exactly the same. Like, I've just been quite a consistent human being, which is a good thing, I guess. But sometimes, you know, I do need to change some of my ways. But yeah, I've just always been that chick.
I don't know how I'm
not going to sit here and be like, well, actually, I went on a meditation course in Hereford and everything changed all of a sudden. Like, it doesn't work like that. I just so happen to be someone who comes from an environment that takes a lot of risk, but then also just, I just am, I'm that kind of, I've got the kind of, whoa, what do I have to lose mentality? Mm.
Consistency, you know, and I think that is another word for like integrity in a sense. It's like, what else do you think it contributed to that?
Oh my, definitely, like there are phrases I always say in my head. Like the walk with purpose thing is something I always, like, it's just a voice that repeats itself. I always say, what do you have to lose, in my head. Mm-hmm. I think if you don't ask, you don't get. You know, imagine like you see your most favourite guitar player ever, like in a cafe, and he looks like a moody bastard, but you think, oh, you know, I need to go up to him. What do you have to lose? Mm. And if you don't ask, you don't get. I always think, if you don't ask, you don't get.
Yeah.
And it's just simple kind of rituals. Yeah. Of just, you know...
One of my favourites is never ask for permission, always ask for forgiveness. Amen. And I've never had a situation where that hasn't worked out. Oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't realise that I couldn't jump the fence at Glastonbury and come through to VIP. And they're like, obviously you're not supposed to do that. But it's worked every time. If you're humble and you like throw out some charisma with your apology, it's like the one thing I think I'd teach my kids.
Never
like,
just ask stop for asking. Permission, always ask for forgiveness.
No, never. Yeah, never ask for never ask for permission.
Always ask for forgiveness.
Yeah.
Can I do this? Don't ask that. I'm sorry I did it. If you're not supposed to do it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I say that.
I say to do nothing. Just do it.
Okay, even better.
I'm Nike.
Don't even say sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
So I just look at them clueless, like.
I'll apologise on our behalf.
Make them think that they did the wrong thing.
Better, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what my mum does. She always makes people think they've done it wrong when actually she's completely wrong.
And on that note, what do you think is the biggest risk you're glad you took?
I've lived alone since I was 17. That's not been easy. It's been, it's horrible at times. It still has its times when it's horrible, but that's probably the biggest risk and the thing I'm proudest of.
Mm.
Potentially on a personal level I could sit here and be like, yeah, oh, I took this big risk by coming into the Sony building and getting signed here. It's just not, you know, like that's a risk. Yes, it's a risk, but it, you know, it has pros and cons. It's just a work risk. That I think the real risks are the things that you take in your personal life that can affect everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so for me
that
it
can rock the foundations.
Exactly. So it was moving out at 17.
Yeah.
Have you ever made a decision where you've gone against your instinct? Because I'm so fascinated
by
this notion.
100%. Oh my gosh, yeah.
Mm.
Sociopaths. So I've dated a sociopath. That was fun. No, like a genuine clinical sociopath.
I've had one of them.
Yeah. Great fun. Great fun for about 3 weeks. And I just had this. Then I had an instinct and I was like, this is all wrong.
Mm.
And I was like, no, it's not happening.
How do you know you can trust your instincts though?
Otherwise,
how do you know when you know?
Because you feel like you're going to shit yourself. You genuinely, you know, everyone has that feeling. Yeah, literally, you feel like you're going to shit yourself. Just that, I say, if it doesn't give you a flat stomach, and when I say flat stomach, I don't mean like, I'm a size zero. None of that. If it doesn't give you a flat stomach, and we all know what a flat stomach means, that kind of calm feeling in your stomach, then don't do it.
And yeah, I completely agree. I was listening to a podcast earlier about energy, so... When you're really, really excited about something, it's like you're in this constant like flow of like buzz and like heightened adrenaline. But it's also very similar to the feeling of fear.
Mm.
Sides of the exact same thing.
Yeah.
But if you make a decision based on balance, you get calmness and you get clarity.
Yeah.
That's what we should be aspiring for.
Yeah.
Mm. I also think like, I don't know about you guys, but for me, a lot of my like career has been like saying yes to stuff that I definitely wasn't like skilled enough or capable enough of doing, and being like, I'll just get into that position and I'll just figure it out when I'm there. And I think so often now we're trying to make calculated decisions on things that we should do. In actual fact, like so much of us as humans is learning as we go. And actually like the resilience thing is the thing that gets us there, but actually it's the experience of struggling and challenges and like not being able to do what you think you should be able to do that actually pushes us to the point of figuring it out.
Yeah.
So not kind of premeditating everything and planning it and just sort of
taking
those risks and trusting your instinct to do so.
I guess it's again unsubscribing from the things that we are told we should be doing, the process, the kind of the ladder we should be climbing.
Yeah.
Like go about it in a completely different way. I know that's what I did with my career when I left my MA in child psychotherapy. I thought the only way to really change perceptions of body image can also happen in a counselling room, but it can also happen by being part of the fashion industry, being a size 16, shooting for a brand.
By example.
Yeah,
you're doing it by example.
Yeah. And I think that's what you're doing as well. But
I don't know about that. I just feel like I'm, I love all like these compliments. I feel like I'm writing songs and I'm just, you know. I just so
you're not. You're not.
Mates.
You're opening up. You're opening up a dialogue and a conversation.
I'm glad. I'm glad exist. You guys think that. If it with me, I'm just like, oh, this guy's gonna be so pissed. I named him in this. Like, yeah, no. I just
no. But it's not about name like pulling things out. It's about the kind of the reason behind it. It's the intent and the fact that you are. Again, I'm gonna bring up the unsubscribing from what. Box they could be putting you in, whether you're an R&B and soul artist, and you saying, actually no, I'm going to bring my guitar on stage, I'm going to tell people to join with me and sing and loosen up and let go whilst I eat my rice cakes. Yeah. It's like that's all an example.
Yeah.
And it's like you're encapsulating that feeling of just being you, and it would be so easy to just go on and maybe scrap all of that and do what a label prescribes you at.
But then I wouldn't be able to do it. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah,
it's like what we said, the flat feeling in the stomach. I just can't do it. I just can't, like, I think about it, I just think, like, I'd have a pooey stomach every day if I did that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'd be known as Wind instead of Joy Crooks.
Windy Crooks. I'll still be there because I'm all about integrity.
I have a question. So often when, you know, these podcasts are done, they're reflecting back on someone's experiences and their history, and they're speaking to women that have been through years or you know, 20 years of an industry. And I think what we really love about you is you feel so kind of pioneering at your age and what you're doing to kind of lead the way for a legacy that could be really valuable to young women. From now to like 20 years time, what is that legacy for, you know, it's a hectic word, but what do you want to leave? Like, what is the legacy that you want your kids or your family to kind of recognize about you and in what you're doing?
I mean, what I'd love, and I don't know if I'll ever get there, but I'd just love to be to set example by honesty, like we were saying, but just with longevity. Because when you're able to do that for a sustained amount of time, you know, you haven't lost yourself, and then you're living by example. So that's basically what I'd want to do. You know, and then you pick and choose what you want to, you know, hopefully you'll be writing songs about more than just, you know, fellas. And other things that, you know, I do try, and I do write songs about other things. On my most recent EP, I have a song called For a Minute, which is about making the most out of a shitty area that you may have grown up in, but seeing the beauty in it. And and my EP before that, I had a song called Power, which is about the misuse of power and how that affects anyone, male, female, whatever you are. So yeah, basically I'd like to live by example. I'd like to have a long career, and I'd like that career to be as honest as possible. And you know, I've got to do this for myself. This isn't about anyone else. You know, God bless the grandkids I may have, but it's not about them, it's about me. And like, this is my chance to do something for myself. And if that so happens to help people, then fantastic. And if it doesn't, then, you know, it's, you know, I can't do anything about that. It's not for other people, it's for myself. I have to, and I've got to remind myself that. Yeah. My art's for myself.
Being selfish isn't negative, though.
No, it isn't.
You have to be self-full.
But I also don't want to disappear up my own arse.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm making that point, that I'm doing this for longevity. You can't disappear up your own arse while trying to become an artist that has longevity. It doesn't work. You know, it's about grounding yourself and, like you said, balance to get there. You've got to be balanced. I haven't done it, so I'm guessing, but yeah. Grounded, family, important, love, important. You know, and keeping your GDP, you know, to a nice little rate there. Getting happy by small things, not big things.
Yeah. What are the three things that you want to I mean, I think you're awesome, and there's probably nothing that you want to unsubscribe from.
I want to unsubscribe from so much.
Tell us the three things that you think you need to work on that you're going to make conscious effort to unsubscribe from.
I'm very irrational. Like, I stress too much, which is something that people don't read off of me, because I think I do carry myself in a certain way that comes across confident and know what I'm doing. But I do, like, I'm very, very stressed about things, and it's just not good, and it's not healthy, and it's not productive either, because actually you can spend your whole time stressing and not actually do anything about it.
Overthinking.
Terrible, terrible trait of mine. Spending less time on my phone is definitely one. Shit just makes me sad. just makes me sad. I don't find, you know, you think that, okay, if I sit and read the news for 5 minutes, then that'll give me, you know, allow me to be on Instagram for the next 20 minutes. It just doesn't work like that. I don't think phones make me particularly happy unless I'm pressing voice memo to record a little cheeky beginning snippet of a song that I'm really excited about. That's about it. I need to spend less time on my phone, particularly social media. And then the third school of thought that I'm trying to, or third thing I'm trying to unsubscribe to. I don't know. I think overthinking and stressing less is like probably the most important. My phone, definitely. Meat. I don't want to eat meat anymore. I just don't think it's good for you.
Yeah.
I don't want to eat meat anymore. I think it's bad for you. And I'm gluten intolerant, and I care about because I think keeping your gut happy keeps your mind happy. That is such a Dalit yummy mummy answer to give, isn't it? I'm just scared of meat at the moment, just because it literally, dietitians have talked about how it inflames your body as soon as you eat it and stuff.
It's also not great for the environment.
Yeah. There's that too, yeah.
It's hard to digest.
It's really hard to digest.
Hormones and energy and all the stuff that comes with meat in the slaughterhouse, and when you consume it, you're digesting that too. I
accidentally ate a chicken nugget the other day though, and simply because they don't taste like chicken, and I was not completely sober, and I thought someone was like, oh, do you want one of these, and I was like, oh yeah, this isn't chicken, and I ate it.
I know, we lose track.
The other thing I think you mentioned earlier, which I think is brilliant, like food for thought, was not letting other people's opinions and perceptions of themselves be projected onto you.
But does that not count in overthinking?
Yeah, that sits within overthinking.
Okay, but I think that's a good separate point, actually. Yeah, just bun that. I don't want your... Stop investing your shit into me,
protect
please.
Your energy. That's what I say. Protect your energy. No overthinking. Less time online and maybe more time offline.
Yes, offline. Living. I quite like to live. Yeah. I like playing pool.
Live more. Do fun things.
Live more. Eat less.
Think about
meat.
What you're consuming.
In a nutshell.
Eat, pray, love.
Yes, eat, pray, love. That's what I'm subscribing to.
That's it.
Boom. Sounds good to me. And that's a wrap.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on.
We love ya.
Cheers.
Bye. Cheers.
And that was the lovely Joy Crooks.
That's it from us today, but fear not. We'll be back next week with some more nuggets of wisdom from some of our favourite female inspirations.
If you like what you heard, we would love to know your thoughts. Rate, review, and share with a friend you think might like this also. Don't forget to tune in next week when we're speaking to another special guest.
Unsubscribe is powered by Fourth Floor Creative and brought to you by Bumble, the social network where it's never too late to make the first move.